to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. With me today is my podcast partner, Mike Gianfagna. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Dan.
Our guests are Samir Haddad and Vineet Ganju. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, good morning, Daniel.
Samir is Senior Director of Product Marketing for Etta Compute, the company that creates energy-efficient AI endpoint solutions. Vineet is currently the Vice President and General Manager of the low-power edge AI business at Synaptics. So this should be an interesting discussion. Today, we're going to talk about AI on the edge. And let's start with the recently announced partnership between Etta Compute and Synaptics.
Yeah, sure, Daniel. So what we announced in December last year, in fact, it's a partnership between Etta Compute and Synaptics. And in these partnerships, there are, I would say, two sides. The first side is Synaptics is becoming one investor in Etta Compute. They are the lead investor for his or Series C, so which is very good, and they're becoming one of the board members. And then the second thing is that we are working together on a solution combining the two products of Etta Compute and Synaptics. So we are, in fact, with Etta Compute, at Etta Compute, we will get access to the Katana Edge device, which is the Edge AI solution from Synaptics, which is a very advanced processor for Edge AI. And Synaptics will get access to the Tensai platform, which is the software solution and neural network solution that Etta Compute has been developing in the last few years. So with the combination of this very optimized software from Etta Compute and this very powerful and efficient Edge AI device and processor from Synaptics, we believe that we are will be able to offer a very good Edge AI platform and solution for our customers.
Thanks, Samir. Maybe I'll just add a little bit to that. I think Synaptics is traditionally has been a company that's focused on consumer electronics. And I think one of the additional values that we saw in partnering with Etta Compute, besides the capabilities that they bring on software and AI compiler tools, is the industry knowledge. They've been working to provide and promote low power AI solutions in other markets outside of consumer electronics. In industrial and agriculture and other types of market segments. So there's a lot of value to Synaptics in partnering with Etta Compute and gaining the industry knowledge in other types of market segments where Synaptics has traditionally not been playing.
Thank you, gentlemen. That was a good overview of the partnership and some of your capabilities. So you talked a little bit about each company's field of application and core competency, and I can start to see how these things fit together very well. Maybe a little more discussion on what specifically from a customer point of view is exciting about this announcement. In other words, if I'm trying to build an AI system, why would Synaptics and Etta Compute be a good choice, a good partnership? What is the kind of the field of application that you cover here? Vineet, maybe you can kick that one off.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. That's a great question. So I think I'll just give a little bit of background before I kind of answer the question more directly. So Synaptics obviously is a semiconductor company. And as I mentioned, we're focused mainly on consumer electronics. We've actually been developing edge AI or AI accelerators in silicon for a number of years now, but mainly focused on consumer markets, as I mentioned. In fact, some of the more well-known consumer products in the market, like smart speakers, smart displays, set-top boxes, and so on, are using our silicon today, which has this neural network accelerators on device. And the main targets for these are more higher-powered, wall-powered type products, like I mentioned, speakers and set-top boxes, and so on. And the type of AI processing that's being done there is very heavyweight type of processing on, you know, real time, full HD video or 4K video type processing. So what's interesting moving forward about this partnership with Synaptix and Eta Compute is that we've co-designed a very efficient, power efficient and cost efficient silicon targeting battery powered products that are want to do AI or inferencing in the device on the edge, along with a very memory optimized and you know, low memory footprint and power optimized tools from Eta Compute. So the combination of the two are bringing edge AI to a whole new market segment of low power and battery powered sensors. But we're doing more than just the AI inferencing. Like, we'll still be able to do audio processing, video processing, image processing. But these are in applications where we don't need, you know, necessarily, you know, full resolution video or real-time processing. So the silicon provided by Synaptix is a complete SoC. It's not an AI coprocessor like a TPU type of thing. It does have a neural network acceleration core built into a SoC, like I mentioned, that can connect to cameras, can connect to microphones, and can connect to other types of sensors. And the silicon itself has different types of cores. It's a heterogeneous core system, and each core is highly optimized for a different type of processing. For example, one core is very efficient at image processing, one may be very efficient at voice and audio processing. One may be more efficient at system microcontroller type tasks. And the reason this combination of the Synaptix and Eta Compute solution is compelling is because Eta Compute's tools are not only low power, low memory footprint, as I mentioned, but they are very highly optimized to be able to apportion tasks to the appropriate cores. They work very well across different types of cores, across heterogeneous cores. So being for as a developer, as an AI developer, being able to seamlessly run tasks on the specific core that's optimized for running that task is actually very compelling from a time of development point of view, as well as a overall system power point of view.
Yeah, you know, that brings me to a question. AI for the edge has been trending on SemiWiki. It's an interesting topic. Can you tell me in a simple explanation, why is AI at the edge such an exciting field right now?
Sure. In fact, it has been popularized by many people trying to do some experiment at the edge, and there are lots of, I would say, enthusiasts that have been developing for what we call Tiny ML. In fact, there is a group of enthusiasts that's called the TinyML group, and they have lots of following. Every people from all kind of industry are participating in that. So it started first, I would say, with technology excitement by technology enthusiasts that say, oh, I can do that. I can do my neural network that was running in the cloud. I can now run it on a small microcontroller or small device. So I would say it's really started by more like the visionary and the technology excitement. But that was really the very first step. But since then, in fact, it has been very clear that first, yes, it's possible to run neural network in small devices with low power. And we have demonstrated that since several times already. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing is that now that the technology is there and people have seen that it's possible, they are starting to find real application for this. So for instance, what we are seeing is that the people awareness is an application that is becoming more and more popular and that people are looking at. So how can you, if you have a device and that is interacting with people, for instance, it has a user interface, can the device also know that the people are there? Can the device know how many people are there, what they are doing, how they're behaving? So this kind of information and this kind of concept, how to extract insight from the environment, is really opening some new applications and new way of designing products. So I think that's the main reason why now it's so exciting, because first it was the technology excitement, but now people are finding real applications, and now in fact we are seeing lots of customers in various verticals that are actually developing product or actually trying to deploy their first solution and that they are sampling the market.
Yeah, and I'll kind of add to that. I think as Samir mentioned, I think now that people are seeing practical applications for this, the reason it's becoming exciting is because those practical applications are bringing real value to the people who are making and using these products. You know, in some of our discussions with potential people that would make or use these types of products, they vary across the board when we start talking to people with what you could do with a battery powered device that can do some intelligence based on, you know, the local information sensor data it's collecting. The use cases are just staggering. And all these people that are in various industries that you wouldn't, some of them you wouldn't even think are maybe, you know, technically innovative, they have a lot of uses for this type of product. I'll give you a few examples. Samir had mentioned a people awareness or people counting type of thing in smart buildings, where building managers would love to be able to have, you know, a battery powered camera that you could put in conference rooms and just understand, you know, how many people are going in and out of a conference room in a given day. They don't need to know who the people are or do face recognition or, you know, anything like that. Just simply knowing how many people are going in and out of a room, that helps them better understand how the building is being utilized. They can optimize space for the given people and the utilization. They can optimize energy for those parts of the building. And there's a lot of you know, good insights that they can get that saves them real money, you know, on space or on energy costs. Some of the other examples, you know, we've talked to people that run hospitals, and similarly, having a battery-powered camera that can tell if there's unused assets, you know, somewhere in the building, if there's a wheelchair that's being unused sitting in the corner of a room or a bed being unused or so on. Having a better utilization of those assets, you know, saves real money for them. You know, they don't have to continue to buy more and more of them. They can use the existing assets more efficiently. We've talked to stores, right? This is kind of a common example you hear about wanting to know when a particular shelf is out of inventory of a certain product, right? That's lost sales for a store. If a consumer is walking by and they want to buy that box of cereal and there's nothing on the shelf, so having an automatic instantaneous recognition of when a shelf is out of inventory on certain products is immensely valuable for a retail store. We've even talked to farmers, people who have agricultural businesses. And one of the more unusual examples, we've heard about a chicken farm where they have, you know, rows and rows of cages of chickens, and the way they monitor whether the chickens are sick is today they have people at nighttime when everything's quiet and the chickens are sleeping, they'll actually have people walking up and down the aisles of the chicken warehouse listening for sounds of like wheezing or sneezing or, you know, some kind of notification that the chicken is sick. Now, if they put these low power sensors, you know, with the microphone on it, that's listening for these sounds at nighttime and can automatically, you know, match the sick chicken sound, you know, with some profile, they'll be able to tell quicker and more instantaneously, rather than having somebody walk by and hope that the chicken happens to sneeze when the person's walking by. They'll be able to filter out, you know, the sick chickens, and you know, that saves them an enormous cost of not having the other chickens get sick as well. And so these kinds of applications, you know, as we talk to more and more people, these applications just get more and more abundant, where it's bringing real value to people in their everyday businesses, and the technology is, you know, finally available for them to do some of these things that they've always been thinking about. that to me is why this is really exciting. You know, that's why it's really kind of proliferating and why there's so much interest in this field.
That's a great overview. You know, it almost seems like low power AI applications at the edge are limited only by your imagination. It's pretty exciting. You know, one thing that comes up in the discussion of low power design at the edge is the trade-off between semiconductor design and software design. Both contribute to energy consumption and energy efficiency. How would you gentlemen view that? Where's the real opportunity? Is it both? Is it more one than the other? Or how do you go about marrying software and semiconductor design strategies to affect energy efficiency?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'll start with that one. So I think looking at semiconductor design by itself, first of all, I think you know, this kind of neural network accelerator, you know, we call it NPU, neural network processing unit. I think in other places, maybe I'll call it TPU or something like that. These NPUs, we've seen a lot of innovation over the last few years, right, of people doing more optimized processing on device, and the cores are getting more and more efficient. You know, they're kind of very compelling from a processing efficiency and power point of view. But what we're finding is that just like any other semiconductor product, the overall system is what's more and more important. So even if you have the most efficient NPU that's able to process this neural networks, having the right sensor interfaces to get information from the outside world, having the right overall system power, which more than the core itself is, you know, how efficiently you can move data within the device to different parts of memory, how much memory you put on a given device, and so on. So what we're seeing is that just like anything else in semiconductor design, that the design of the overall chip is kind of with these NPUs embedded and with the types of applications we were talking about is becoming more and more important. The NPU is kind of, I wouldn't say it's becoming standardized, there's still a lot of innovation there. But it's becoming kind of, you know, these chips now will have CPUs, in some cases, you know, GPUs and ISPs, and NPU is just going to be another kind of accelerator that's in these types of chips. So from a semiconductor design point of view, the system level design is still becoming more and more important. But as you said, I think what's key here is that with the NPUs, now you're opening up programming of these embedded devices to a whole new world of users that are using industry standard tools like TensorFlow or you know, Caffe or Onyx to develop AI models. And the whole goal is making these edge embedded devices accessible to that huge array of users. You know, until now, embedded processing has been kind of a specialized field for software developers that have to be, you know, have specific training in doing embedded processing. And then you have this other world of users that are doing, you know, cloud-based processing or something on big CPUs like Intel or on smartphones and so on. So the key is to have the semiconductor designed in such a way that the people that are using industry standard, you know, TensorFlow type frameworks can easily get all of that innovation that they're doing on AI models in kind of, you know, cloud-based systems, get them to easily put those on device and not have to worry about as much about the rest of the embedded system. Once the semiconductor design and software design can get to that point where it's tapping into that world of AI developers, then I think we really kind of see this explosion of you know, potential use cases, you know, tapping into the innovation of all those AI developers out there in the market. And as you said earlier, the software has to be, you know, efficient as well. The software framework and the tools that enable those AI developers to put their models on the embedded devices have to be efficient, power efficient, and easy to use.
As Vinit said, being able to use open standards like TensorFlow on the device is very important, but there is a big gap between doing something with TensorFlow and doing something efficient with TensorFlow. And this is really where at Eta Compute we have been putting an emphasis. We have been developing our TensorFlow compiler. We have been developing our TensorFlow libraries and all the software to really be efficient at the edge. So when you have your model and you try to port it on a device, and especially on a multi-core device, it can be very complex to optimize, because you want to take advantage of all the optimization that you have, all the hardware that you have put in your device, all these cores, but how you manage them, how you manage the memory, how you optimize the transfer and the operators. It requires some expertise, and it requires some specific tools. And this is really where we see the main, developments and the main trend in terms of tools and software for edge AI, where we will have lots of development in the optimization and in terms of performance, memory, efficiency, to make this neural network and this edge AI solution very optimized to run on battery operated devices or running complex neural networks in very small, low-cost AGI products.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting example, the chicken one. I have a new grandson, and we went and bought a baby monitor, and boy, they've changed over the years since we last used them. And it has so many features, but I don't see AI in it yet. Hopefully that's coming, because, you know, I understand sick chickens are a problem, but I really want to know if my grandson is sick or if there's some other issues that we can monitor him remotely. But, you know, I guess the question really is, what innovation is edge AI enabling?
If you think about edge AI, at the end, what it is about bringing insights to the device. So, so your device, instead of just reporting the information and just being just a channel from you say your environment to something, a cloud, or to yourself by sending you information and so on, it really understand what's happening and takes actions. So we see that, in fact, in maybe two types of insight that the device can get. One is people and person awareness, and the second is context awareness. So, for instance, people and context awareness, that's exactly what you described with your grandson. Or if you want to have, for instance, a camera, a baby cam that knows when the baby is good, or when the baby may be not comfortable, or if there is something wrong with the environment, that's something that we can bring with edge AI. In terms of context awareness, we see that a lot in, for instance, condition monitoring, which is used for asset tracking or predictive maintenance. So if you have, for instance, a windmill, you want to monitor everything that's happening with it, and you want to be able to detect if there is a problem with your gearbox, for instance, if you can anticipate if there is a defect that will be coming. So that's really the way we see people will add value to their product, and will use edge AI by doing this, enabling the device, enabling the end product, the physical product, to make decisions by being aware of the people around, or by being aware about the context around the product.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that, I think some other innovation that's kind of really being spurred on by this edge AI movement is in the technology itself. You know, I think we talked earlier about the NPU cores themselves becoming more and more efficient, but there's so many kind of steps or so many kind of layers to the technology in these applications. You know, besides the cores themselves, I think there's a lot of innovation happening with the neural network architectures that are running on these cores. You know, I think a few years back when the industry was running neural networks on device, we kind of standardized around a few of these common architectures like MobileNet V1, V2, and so on. But as we start looking at specific use cases, specific applications, I think these AI developers are realizing maybe the industry standard architectures like MobileNet may not be the most optimized for a given application. So we're seeing a lot of innovation in kind of furthering improve upon those industry standard and networks to get, you know, better and better performance at lower and lower power. The other layer in terms of the AI development is, you know, data collection and annotation. I think there's a lot of innovation going on there. You know, how do you train a model with limited data? You know, the biggest challenge in kind of developing AI models is getting more, the need for more and more data. So we see a lot of innovation happening around how to augment data, how to, you know, annotate data more efficiently, so that these models can be developed faster and faster with more and better performance, but with less and less data. Some practical innovations that we're seeing is, you know, once these products are deployed in the field, and they have the AI models running on device, you know, no matter how much training you do ahead of time, once you've launched a product and it's launched in, you know, millions of homes and you have millions of users using it on a daily basis, you really start seeing more and more use cases, more and more corner conditions that you wouldn't have seen in your training process up front. And so how to upgrade those models in the field, you know, with that real life data, but without having to, you know, redo the training process all over again, without having to throw away the existing models and start all over again with the new data. How do you augment the models with the augmented data that you have from the new use cases? So there's a lot of innovation happening there. And then, you know, in the devices themselves, you know, what we're seeing is that, especially in this low power segment in battery powered products, there's a need to last longer and longer off a given battery, so that, you know, they want these devices to last, you know, not months, but years and multiple years. But at the same time, we want more and more capabilities from these products. We want to be able to do, you know, not just some position or sensor data, you know, wake up once an hour to do that, but actually want to be able to do, you know, image processing or audio processing. So the trade-off between peak performance when it's awake and low power when it's not awake, you know, when something's not happening, when there's no people in the room or there's, you know, the chickens are not sleeping, you want this device to be in a very low power mode, but be able to wake up to a much higher performance. So just in the semiconductor design itself, there's this innovation that's happening of, you know, how do you wake up quickly and process very efficiently at a kind of high performance level, but then be able to go back to consuming only, you know, microwatts of power when nothing is happening, and be able to detect in that microwatts of power, be able to detect when something is about to happen so that you can wake up quickly and not miss any of the events. So there's a lot of innovation around, you know, different power stages just within the device itself. It's very exciting, you know, when this something like this, when disruptive technology like low power edge AI happens, it's very exciting to see everybody in the value chain, you know, coming up with new innovations. And I do believe we're just in the infancy of this disruption right now. So the pace of innovations and the size of innovations is quite significant these days.
I agree completely. You know, the nice thing about the semiconductor industry is it's filled with such, you know, brilliant people, and you get all these people working together and collaborating, and we come up with some of the most amazing things. This is a good stopping point. Thank you, gentlemen. Excellent content. And thank you, everyone, for participating in the Semiconductor Insiders podcast. That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.